Haytham ripped loose the makeshift blindfold and flicked it into oblivion. The fat man's back was to them. All he could see was the gibbet and the hinter far, far down, sprawling into infinity.
"You're him, aren't you?"
Haytham could barely hear him over the windsong.
"The Reaper?"
His whole body shook with the force of his shivering, but he didn't look back.
"How was he supposed to pay you? You already know,"
the fat man whispered.
"He was gonna give me you."
What is up, you guys? Welcome back to another episode where we last left off as Lee recovers following Haytham's daring rescue from the fire at Paul's place. High up in the keep, Elias is plotting his countermove. As always, if you're not fully caught up yet, I will have a link to the full playlist down in the episode description, so make sure to check that out there, along with a couple of recap videos just to give you a sense of where we are in the story. All right, that is enough out of me. I will catch you guys at the end of the episode. I'm Josh Call. And this is Last Colosseum. The platform groaned under its own incredible weight as the dense network of ropes and tackles hoisted its cargo skyward. The liftmaster was a reformed ship captain, an ex-pirate, Brayden explained out of the corner of his mouth as the dried-out sea dog swaggered past, barking orders, his thick chestnut arms swinging like belaying pins. He designed the whole pulley system himself. Even in the relative safety of the gray man's carriage, Haytham's stomach did queer somersaults as the city spread, then flattened below them. The spider's face was dappled with orange beads as the evening sun crept toward the purple fringe of mountains in the impossible distance where the brawler had gone but once. For a moment, the sun stood still as the lift climbed to meet it. Then it shuddered to a halt at the edge of the cliff, at the edge of Dominion, and the sun continued its slow retreat behind the mountains out west.
"We caught up to him half a day outside the city," Kingmaker drawled as the liftmen scurried to unload the platform enough to clear a path for the carriage. "If I'd sent anyone but Randall, he'd have been in the wind."
Haytham didn't answer. After the ambush, it had taken several days before he was confident that he could look the sellsword in the face without braining him with a brick. Even so, the scrapes and bruises he'd earned when they tackled him would fade well before the dull red resentment that glowed like hot coals in his belly would.
"Listen,"
the gray man added, reading the brawler's thoughts with those fever-bright eyes of his.
"I'm bringing you as a favor. Before you get yours, I want to find out what he knows."
After that, Haytham could have at him. Admittedly, he was as eager as Brayden to know who had targeted them. Elias, the Brethren, another squad of opportunist outlaws. It was not an insignificant list of men who'd want to end him. But more than that, he wanted to take whoever had laid a finger on the boy and drag him by the throat to the gates of the void.
"As long as I get mine,"
the brawler murmured back. The liftmen had cleared a path, and the carriage rattled through. On the dock, where a squad of keepers busily checked the crates and wagons for contraband before one scrap of freight could begin the long trek north toward Haytham, a tired-looking sergeant waved them on. Anticipation reared up in Haytham's chest as the city disappeared behind them. He fairly marveled at the sort of visceral reaction he'd had to the boy's beating. He'd been assured that Lee would make a full recovery, thanks in no small part to the timely arrival of the gray man's doctor. But even so, it left an ache in his chest, seeing the boy with his eyes black and his nose broken, two of his teeth knocked out, his chest rattling with every breath. All because he'd gotten tangled up in the web of Haytham's vengeance. It had been a cold realization over the days that followed. Even as he threw himself with hard-eyed gusto at the task of moving Paul and her boys into the new place the spider had arranged for them, that everyone he'd returned to since he climbed the ramps that zigzagged up to the city on the cliff, implicitly or explicitly, had been asked to risk their lives for him. And now Lee had paid the price. Moving the cots and the furniture into Paul's new place was his small sort of penance, and it spared him the quiet torture of being alone in his own mind. After he told Amitha what had happened, a full day later, still reeking of smoke, she'd thrown herself into it with equal enthusiasm, marshalling supplies donated by neighbors and nearby shops while Hatham muscled 2 dozen beds bought with the gray man's gold up the stairs of the new place. Studying the spider below the heavy shelf of his brow, sitting opposite him in the carriage's cramped, dimly lit confines, Hatham imagined he could read guilt over Lee on Kingmaker's imperturbable features. Why else would he have spent 100 crowns, at least, furnishing the old woman's new place? To say nothing of providing the building to her and her boys without condition. He'd saved the boy's life, or at least the doctor he'd sent had, and the brawler found himself unsettled by an intense sense of gratitude toward the gray man for what he'd done already. It sang a strange counterpoint to the anger that still blazed at the root of him for their failure to bring down Elias at the time and the place in the way that they'd planned. The anger was warm and familiar and queerly comforting. The gratitude was novel, and it unsettled him.
"You think he's with Elias?"
he asked of the runner they'd captured.
"I'm not sure what I think," Braden mused, then added, "but I intend to find out."
If the cutthroats had been paid by White Rose, it was only the opening salvo to a relentless campaign he'd begun in recent days, kicking down doors, interrogating terrified civilians, and raising general mayhem scouring the city for the brawler. Hatham had begun growing out his russet beard again, first out of carelessness and then out of prudence when wanted posters stenciled with his face started cropping up in the coppers. It had taken much pressure on the part of Kingmaker, but he'd even allowed himself to be shuffled out of his place near the Eidolon and into a filthy little flea-bitten shack near the brink, with the gray man's assurances that it was only until Elias gave up the hunt. Hatham also suspected that the dinginess of his new quarters might have had something to do with Braden's pique at the brawler for causing all this with his ill-placed bowshot at the lordling's carriage. However, he'd balked when the gray man tried to bar him from seeing Am, and Kingmaker had been forced to arrange their midnight rendezvous lest the brawler slip his guard and get picked up at the Eidolon trying to squeeze in the back door. He knew he'd have to tell her everything soon. She'd been gracious enough not to press him about why he'd given up the place in the Golden Quarter, but he knew that silence wouldn't hold forever. If there couldn't be honesty between them, he'd lose her. It had already taken all of his willpower not to confront her over her meeting with White Rose. He trusted her with his life, but in the quiet dark, when his thoughts ran on at a full gallop, he felt the strain on that confidence, like a sapling bent back to the point of breaking. But how much worse must it have been for her, when the unspoken agreement they'd had from the start was that she not ask about the grim business which had brought him back to the edge? It was yesterday, while he was rearranging the cots in the upstairs room of the new place for the 11th time, that Paul had told him with a grand damn certainty what a good one Amatha was. The marrying kind, she'd insisted. In the old golden glory days, he'd assumed that he'd always have Am at his side, whatever come next. But he was older now, and burdened by the bitter weight of black vengeance, and the thought of her terrified him. It had been harder than he'd thought, playing house even as he strove to keep the fiddler in one hand and the bastard in the other, and never to let them meet. When they lay in bed after love and she spoke softly in his ear about someday, it was an unmistakable feeling low in his belly that he had no someday. At least no someday that was not bound up with Elias White Rose. She made him wonder if there could be something beyond his vengeance. He'd spent a 7-year rebuilding himself around that diamond-hard determination, but once it was taken away, when his very foundation was undermined, would the whole tower collapse? He didn't know. The thought of finding out was exhilarating, and it frightened him, but it shored up his resolve. Until he told her everything, all they could build together were houses of shadow.
"When do we move on him again?"
The gray man took his time responding, staring out at the jagged canopy of leafless branches that reached for them as the carriage rattled past.
"I don't know. A moon, maybe."
Hatham's nostrils flared. The gray man's eyes flicked to his, a smirk tugging at the corner of his lip.
"He's hiding in the keep. So unless you've got a battering ram in your pocket..."
The brawler scowled and broke his gaze, glowering at the column of dust that plumed in the carriage's wake.
I thought not, continued the spider. So, we'll have to draw him out.
He'll be expecting that.
Of course. But until you can walk through walls, we'll have to make do with what we have.
That conspiratorial smirk stretched across his sagging cheeks, which quivered with every wrinkle in the road the carriage bounced over.
Rumor is that he's barricaded himself in his rooms. Doesn't come out for anything.
As reluctant as the brawler was to admit it, there was some small satisfaction in that.
Do you know his carriage nearly flipped into the river? Braden said, sounding wistful. Whole damn thing would have looked like an accident.
He was watching Hatham closely, goading him. It was an obnoxious little game he played to see if he could make the brawler lose his temper.
He refused to take the bait. How do we draw him out?
Like you said, Kingmaker nodded. He'll be expecting deception. Every invitation to whiskey and cigars could be the setup for another ambush.
He paused while he twisted the fraying barb of his mustachio into a needle point.
So what if you didn't hide the ambush at all? What if you could draw him out of hiding precisely because he knows you're waiting for him?
Hatham stared at him.
When you climb into the pit, Braden explained with an indulgent twirl of his fingers, you're not surprised when someone tries to knock your teeth in.
The brawler was incredulous.
You want me to fight him?
Not exactly.
His eyes glowed like coals in the dying light.
I want you to duel him.
He ignored the younger man's disbelieving snort. His gaze dropped to Hatham's wide hands resting on his knees, thick white calluses studded on every knuckle.
How's your sword arm?
Shit.
Then you'd better practice. You'll have your work cut out for you.
He'll never go for it.
He could already smell the potential for a double cross. He didn't doubt that Elias would be expecting the same. It'd be too easy to put a squad of sellswords, or gray cloaks in Elias's case, into position early at whatever their chosen battleground would be, and have them sink a dozen quarrels into their target the moment he raised his head.
Are you sure? If he thinks he can win,
have you forgotten how he became lord?
Now it was Braden who didn't take the bait. He bowed his head slightly, as if to acknowledge the brawler's point.
I have not.
He looked out at the road and the tree line. The sky was fading to that dull no color as twilight faded.
As it happens, I agree with you. If I were Elias, I'd take the challenge, choose the dueling ground, then send a company of keepers to drag you off in chains. Does that sound right?
Basically.
The spider nodded.
That's where I come in.
He reached beneath his seat and slid out a slender black valise from under his legs. Hatham hadn't noticed it until now. Kingmaker snapped open the silver clasps and rifled through the sheaf of parchments therein.
The way to make sure he fights fair, he continued, is to threaten something he values more than his neck.
The brawler stared blankly at him. With a satisfied smack of his lips, the gray man produced the sheet he was looking for, smoothed some invisible crease on his knee, and passed him the note.
His name.
Hatham read it, his lips moving slightly as he trudged through the text the way you might hike through a bog. He felt Kingmaker's eyes on him. The spider wore a pained look as he watched the brawler read. It was a letter. An open letter addressed to God and Governor, written in the brawler's own voice, describing in lurid detail the treasonous scheming by which Elias had become White Rose.
There's others, too, the gray man murmured, rifling through other sheets in his valise. This is only the first sortie.
Hatham looked up at him after reading about his own betrayal at the bastard's hands, and he handed back the letter, nodding.
This is good.
I'll have copies put up on every notice board, passed out on every street corner, and painted on the belly of every harlot from here to the stone bridge,
Braden replied with a self-satisfied sneer.
Give me a moon to blacken his reputation, and he'll be forced to come out of hiding to defend it.
His memory of that first confrontation with Elias on horseback was still red and hazy and frayed at the edges, but he remembered the crowd. The adulation for the returning heroes, Elias wearing his vainglory about his shoulders like a mantle over his plate. He wondered how long the lordling could stand to keep his head down while the gray man slung mud all over his reputation. "And when you do set the duel," the older man continued, a slight flush blooming on his cheeks as he rubbed his palms together, "you'll have 3,000 men packed in to watch you settle the score. Like a bloody coliseum." He closed his eyes and sighed, tipping his head back against the seat. "And then, you hope like hell that fortune favors the dumb and ugly." Hatham considered the gray man's proposal. It was risky, but he'd taken bigger risks and lived to drink the memories away. Perhaps even more frightening was the prospect that it just might work. "He could still just have me arrested," some small, stubbornly rational voice in the back of the brawler's mind told the gray man. The idea seemed to deflate Brayden a little. "Or he could prove the better swordsman and cut your heart out," the spider replied, nodding. "You should have just stayed on the Hinter raising sons and chickens if you wanted to live without risk." He opened his eyes and studied the brawler until Hatham broke eye contact with him. "You chose this course, so you accept the losses if they come." He reached for the handle and pushed open the carriage door. The door banged against the frame a few times before the driver noticed, and they shuddered to a halt. Hatham watched the dust column that marked their trail dissipating in the slight breeze. The evening stars in their perfect triad, by whom he'd set his course on the long march from the monastery across the desert, had just begun their eastward vigil above the dark smudge that was the jaw. Brayden threw a hand out to the forest. "Or else you can hit the road, forget his name, and try your luck hunting ape men in the Whitewood." He hopped down from the carriage and stretched before turning back to the brawler. He jerked his head for Hatham to follow him out. "We're here." He saw the tower the moment he stepped out onto the carriage's running board. It was black and crumbling and slightly crooked, like a broken finger that had never healed quite right. As he followed the gray man toward the tree line, Brayden cursing under his breath as the undergrowth snagged on his silks, he saw a fresh pair of wheel ruts in the soft earth angling toward the thicket. A little further on, and they passed the overturned wreckage of a cart. It had been pushed into a ditch and covered with pine needles to hide it from view along the road. Whoever hid it had also cut the horse free. What remained of the harness hung in limp leather strips. City-born Hatham had never been a woodsman, but even he could follow the obvious tracks that had been left by the gray man's men. Twigs were broken and grasses flattened, and several low-hanging branches had been hacked away with swords or axes. If that wasn't enough, as they closed in on the tower, of which he caught the occasional glimpse through gaps in the winter canopy, he could have followed his nose, for the smell of cooking meat set his stomach rumbling. He saw the glow of the cook fire as the trees thinned ahead of them. The two men tending the goat skewered above the flames wore the same dark leathers as Randall. He couldn't say whether they'd been among his comrades on the night of the ambush. All of the sellswords save the Kadari had kept their faces carefully hidden behind black veils, but each had the hard, scarred warrior's face that said he'd killed more men than he'd had name days. The ruined tower hunched right at the edge of the cliff, overlooking the Hinter some 600 feet below. Hung from a weathered wooden arm that sagged over the empty, a rusted iron gibbet creaked in the breeze that clambered over the cliff and snatched at the edges of Hatham's cloak. He wrinkled his nose. The breeze snatched away the welcome smell of the cookfire and brought with it the stench of blood and shit. He traded a look with the spider and saw that Brayden had produced a silk kerchief from his pocket and held it pressed to his mouth. His stomach roiled as he grasped one of the big iron rings on the door. He could hear muffled voices on the other side and dragged it wide. The smell within was tenfold worse than it was outside. It struck his nose with violence. Behind him, Brayden gave a muffled groan before he followed the brawler inside. A half dozen of the sellsword's men stood in a semicircle just inside the door. Torches held by two of them cast long, monstrous shadows on the concave stone walls. Hatham didn't have to say anything. The sellsword saw him and parted for him to pass through to the prisoner. The fat man was a mess. He'd been stripped naked and chained by the wrists to a ring bolted into the crumbling stone wall above his head. He'd shit himself. It was dried all over his enormous pink thighs and smeared in dark streaks on the stone floor. Dried blood caked his bulbous belly from a neat lattice of shallow cuts, and his chest was speckled with vomit. His own small clothes had been draped over his head like a blindfold. The fat man's dry sobs made the thin material flutter. The Qadari had been administering the beating. His usual leather cuirass was draped from one of the surviving balusters at the foot of the staircase spiraling up to the tower's roof, and the sleeves of his dark tunic were rolled up past the elbows. A sheen of sweat on his face gleamed in the torchlight as he turned to the newcomers and traded a few words with Kingmaker in his desert tongue. Hatham stepped past him and approached the prisoner, his face set in a look of grim determination. He could feel the rising pressure of the battle fire in his belly sharpening his senses, and he willed it back. The fat man must have felt the brawler's breath on his skin, or else he saw Hatham's shadow pass over his filthy blindfold, for he squirmed in his bonds and said in a hoarse, broken voice,
"I'm telling you, I don't know anything. I don't know who you are."
One of the other sellswords, a swarthy young man who could have been Randall's son or his brother, growled,
"Shut your mouth, Kafasa."
The fat man did, his body sagging against the chains that held him up, quaking with silent sobs. Hatham glanced back at the gray man, his unspoken question showing plain on his face. He could only see an outline of the spider, backlit by the torches, but he saw the figure nod.
"It's him. The file I collected on this particular cockroach is 2 fingers thick. He kidnaps boys, uses them up, and sells them for scrap. Isn't that right, Mr. Killam?"
His chains rattled as the fat man lunged to his feet.
"No," he sobbed, "it's not me. You have the wrong man."
The tall, angular shape of the Qadari stepped forward, his long, curved dagger flashing in the torchlight as he drew it from his sleeve. The prisoner flinched away from it as Randall slipped the cold steel under the sweaty folds of his neck.
"Then why did you run?"
muttered the sellsword in his gentle lilt.
"The moment you heard I was asking questions about you, you packed out and fled from the edge,"
Kingmaker agreed.
"Tell me again, I have the wrong man."
The fat man didn't answer. The hairs on his armpit stood out in little black tufts as he slumped against the stone wall. The brawler slipped past Randall and squatted down on his hunkers so that his face and the prisoner's were almost level.
"You like to take little boys,"
the Reaper breathed. He waited. The fat man didn't say anything. Hatham remembered what Paul had told him after the fire, that the boy stealers had been watching her place for moons, that street boys disappeared from the edge every day, with no one to look for them and no one to mourn. A surge of white-hot fury ripped through him like a sudden squall, and he thrust his hand around the fat man's throat. The prisoner gasped and thrashed against his chains. Hatham held him fast, sinking his fingernails into the soft flesh on either side of the fat man's windpipe, blood trickling between his fingers and down the prisoner's pink chest.
"Hatham," he heard the gray man's voice behind him, far off and faint. "Hatham."
The brawler relented, shoving the fat man back against the wall. He couldn't see the faces of the sellswords, but he felt their eyes on him as he turned back. Randall was still holding the curved dagger, well within striking distance of the brawler if Kingmaker gave him the word.
"Remember what we talked about," was all Brayden said.
It took him a long moment to get his anger under grips again. The gray man hadn't seen the boy, broken and blistered with his arms outstretched as Paul's place burned all around him. Brayden hadn't paced outside of Lee's sick room all night before the doctor confirmed that he'd survive. The spider didn't know. The Qadari was still eyeing him the way you might look at a rabid dog when he advanced on the prisoner a second time.
"Tell me about Lee."
The fat man hesitated. I don't. Hatham didn't wait for him to finish his denial. He reached out as if he was plucking a flower from the roadside and broke one of the fat man's fingers. The prisoner's scream was shrill and piercing, and it made goose flesh rise on the back of Hatham's arms. Even before the echo of his shriek had faded, he broke two more of the fingers, one after the other. The fat man fainted. Brayden called him off again while one of the other sellswords slipped outside to fetch a water skin from their makeshift campsite. The cool night air that rushed in through the open door was a welcome relief from the stifling, smoky stench of the tower. This time, the spider didn't tell him anything. The young Kadari splashed water in the fat man's face, and he came to, coughing and spluttering.
"Please," he wheezed, his chest heaving. "You're not fooling anyone," Hatham rumbled. "Your only hope of walking out of here," came Kingmaker's voice behind him, "is to tell this man what he wants to know."
"I told you, I don't even know you."
Hatham's anger snapped taut against the chains by which he'd bound it.
"You burned my friend alive."
"I didn't. He did that to himself."
He realized what he'd said even before the words were fully out of his mouth. A thin murmur ran between the sellswords, and as the fat man fell silent, the gray man told him,
"You have 7 more fingers."
When the prisoner spoke again, desperation tinged his voice.
I won't. I want your word you'll let me go."
"Done,"
replied Kingmaker at once. The brawler spun on his heel and advanced on the gray man.
"What do you mean, done?"
he said through his teeth. By the torchlight reflecting off his own face, he saw that the older man wore a tight-lipped smile, almost a grimace, the sort that said, "I'll do what I have to."
"Brayden, what do you want, Hatham?"
he snapped. His eyes hadn't left the prisoner, but now the brawler saw anger there as his gaze briefly touched his before flicking back to the fat man.
"Do you want to chase down every pinchpenny who's ever picked your pocket? Or do you want Elias? He needs to pay. Him paying won't change what happened to the boy."
"No," the brawler agreed, "but it's a start."
He could sense the sellsword's presence over his shoulder, watching him. His exchange with the spider had been scarcely above a whisper, but in the cramped, echoing confines of the tower, it might as well have been at full voice. The older man sighed.
"Sometimes the devil gets away with it," he murmured.
He brandished the silk kerchief he was still holding at the prisoner.
"You can hunt this one, or you can hunt White Rose."
Hatham didn't say anything. As he turned back and advanced on the fat man, he still wasn't sure which one he'd chosen.
"How did you find the boy?"
The fat man, who'd faded into a kind of semi-consciousness, jerked away from him when he heard the brawler's voice. His wrists were raw and bloody from the coarse irons bolted into the wall, his broken fingers purple and twisted like the branches of a diseased tree.
"I didn't,"
he said after a moment.
"Your boy found me. He wanted something, and I gave it to him. I asked to be paid, and he robbed me."
Hatham didn't answer. He wasn't sure what he'd been expecting. The fat man to admit that Elias had paid him, that he'd been stalking Hatham for a moon, that Lee had been in the way and had rather let himself be pounded into mincemeat than give the brawler over. The thought of that would have been queerly comforting. The prisoner sensed his hesitation.
"That's right,"
he snarled, looking up through his blindfold at where he imagined the brawler was.
"Your boy is not so lily-white, is he?"
Hatham ignored him.
"What do you know about Elias White Rose?"
The name felt alien on his tongue. The fat man shrugged, at least as well as he could shrug all chained up.
"Some noble prig. What do I care?"
he grunted.
"Burn the keep. Hang the governor."
After a moment's reflection, he added,
"You're not friends of his, are you?"
"He's hiding something,"
the gray man purred from the darkness behind him. The prisoner shuddered and dipped his head toward the floor.
"How was Lee supposed to pay you?"
He didn't say. Hatham pried one of his surviving fingers loose and grasped it as if to snap it like a bit of kindling. The fat man trembled, but he kept his silence. A low, ethereal hum like the sound from blowing over the mouth of a bottle made him hesitate. The tower was pocked with dozens of little holes where the mortar had crumbled away over the centuries, and when the wind caught one of these just right, it sang an unearthly note that filled the tower and sent goose flesh racing down the backs of Hatham's arms. The brawler and the others looked up into the dark belly of the ruined tower, pierced by thin slivers of evening light passing through the smoke of their torches. It gave him an idea.
Cut him loose.
He led the way up the crumbling stone stairs, several of Randall's mercenaries half-dragging, half-marching the prisoner up after him, the fat man crying and pleading with them the whole way. The trapdoor that opened onto the roof was ancient and rotted through, and it came apart in pieces as the brawler put his shoulder to it. The wind tore hungrily at his clothes, spitting grit into his eyes as it screamed between the battlements. The gibbet swung like a pendulum with a steady creak at the end of its long wooden arm over the 600-foot drop down to the hardpan. The sellswords shoved the prisoner through the trapdoor, and he nearly fell flat on his face. He was still blindfolded, and he hunched there with one hand on the battlement for support as the night wind instantly dried the sweat on his body and set him shivering. Hatham ripped loose the makeshift blindfold and flicked it into oblivion. The fat man's back was to them. All he could see was the gibbet and the hinter far, far down, sprawling into infinity. A low moan rose from deep in his chest, his shit-smeared knees shaking, and for a moment Hatham thought he'd faint and pitch headfirst over the side.
"You're him, aren't you?"
Hatham could barely hear him over the windsong.
"The Reaper?"
His whole body shook with the force of his shivering, but he didn't look back.
"How was he supposed to pay you?"
the brawler heard himself say.
"You already know,"
the fat man whispered.
"He was gonna give me you."
It felt like he'd been splashed in the face with cold water. He snarled and felt himself lurch toward the prisoner. The fat man heard the others shout and looked back in time to see the brawler's fist arcing toward him. Hatham punched him square in the jaw, and he heard something crack. The fat man stumbled, his feet still slick with his own filth. He screamed and spun as he fell toward the brink, clawing desperately for something, anything, that could break his fall. An instant before he plunged over the side, he managed to slap his hands around a rusted iron rib of the gibbet, his fingers momentarily forgetting that they were broken as he held it in a death grip. His arms were outstretched, the whole bulbous heft of him suspended over the empty, clinging to the edge of the tower by his toes. His scream was loud enough for them to hear it in the gray keep.
"Pull me back! Pull me back!"
The sellswords lunged forward to haul him back from the brink. Hatham threw up a hand and caught one of them in the chest. The others hesitated. Randall looked at him strangely.
"You're a liar,"
he told the fat man, his voice nearly snatched away by the wind.
"It's true. We were gonna split the bounty, but then it goes and gets my men killed. Please, I'm slipping."
"What does he mean?"
rumbled Randall, standing beside the brawler.
"When did he get your men killed?"
Hatham growled.
"At the inn, on the hinter. We planned it out. I can tell you more. Pull me in! Pull me in!"
The brawler withdrew his hand on the sellsword's chest. As the mercenaries caught the fat man by his ankles and started to drag him back from the brink, Hatham and Randall converged at the top of the stairs where the gray man was leaning against one of the battlements, playing absently with the barb of his mustachio. He looked troubled.
"The boy,"
muttered Hatham, still not allowing himself to believe it.
"The boy,"
Brayden agreed with resignation. The sellsword snarled.
"In it the ilma not kore ansach enough."
There was a hard edge to the gray man's voice, and Randall instantly bit down on whatever else he would have said.
"I'll handle the boy."
Hatham wasn't looking at either of them. He was watching the cautious work of the sellswords as they pulled the fat man back towards safety, the prisoner crying all the while that his hands were slipping.
"What about him?"
"What about him?" snapped Brayden. "We have what we want. I'll give him a choice. Keep north for Haven, or east past the jaw. Either way, if he wants to live, I never want to see him again."
Hatham opened his mouth to protest. The spider waved him off.
"If God wants him punished, he can do it."
He never got further. With a report like a crack of thunder, the iron rib on the cage that the prisoner had been grasping for dear life snapped. He dropped over the side and tore out of the grasp of the mercenaries who'd been pulling him in. The only one who kept his grip, the young Kadari who had his arms hooked behind the fat man's knee, was nearly yanked over the edge after him. His comrades caught him by the belt and stopped him short with his head and shoulders jutting out past the battlements. The fat man had fallen 100 feet before he remembered to scream. It lasted several seconds before it was broken by a distant thud that made them all flinch. No one said a word. It was as quiet as death on top of the tower, but for the windsong through the battlements. The sellswords who'd scrambled to catch the prisoner before he fell gingerly climbed to their feet and waited for the pronouncement of the gray man. None of them would meet his eye. None but the brawler. Kingmaker said nothing. He had his eyes upcast toward the sky, a look of faint bemusement on his features, as if wondering whether he had been overheard. Thank you guys so much for listening. It really is a pleasure to be able to share this whole story with you. As always, it is a huge favor if you leave a like or a comment on the video, and if you're catching this story on podcast, you can do a huge favor by leaving a 5-star review so that this story can reach as many people as possible. All right, that's enough from me. I will catch you guys next week, same time, same place. I'll see you there.